Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
So my name is Chuck Waygood. I'm Senior Director of Talent Acquisition at Kong Inc. And Kong is an open source API management platform. We're pre-IPO. I've been with Kong now for about 3 years.
Chuck, thanks so much for making time joining us on the Ivy Podcast. Before we talk about all the great things you're building at Kong, give us a thumbnail version of your career prior to that.
Okay. So I've been in talent acquisition now for a little over probably 20 years. I'm dating myself, Jan, but I started out in agency recruiting. I worked for a company called Tech Systems. Tech Systems is a large technical recruiting firm. Worked in various roles with them. My whole career with them was probably close to 15 years. And then when I left the recruiting agency world, I then went in-house to lead recruiting for a company called Hortonworks. Hortonworks at the time was a pre-IPO startup with about 120 employees based out of Palo Alto. And I was hired to run recruiting and then to scale the company. Took that company through IPO and then up to about 1,800 employees. Grew a talent acquisition team of 40 plus people globally. And then left Hortonworks in early 2019 to move back into the pre-IPO world. And that's when I started with Kong. Kong was a Series C pre-IPO company at that point based out of San Francisco. We've since raised another round. We're Series D now, looking to now raise another round this year. I joined Kong when it was about 130 employees. We're now a little over 400 with the goal to keep continuing to grow and scale. So,
well, that's super exciting. Super exciting. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Very diverse backgrounds, and you've been on different sides of the, I guess, the organization when it comes to, you know, just the pre-IPO and going public. So those are the interesting dynamics I want to talk to you a little bit further about. But in terms of talent acquisition, you've been in that space for quite some time. What are the different trends that you're personally very excited about in talent acquisition these days? What are you researching? What are you mostly excited about?
To me, really two of the things that I think are most exciting, the focus that everybody has now on D&I and really trying to drive a more inclusive hiring environment across organizations. Typically that was really primarily for public companies that needed to worry about public perception. But the beauty of it now is now it's permeated all the way down into the startups where, you know, even Series A companies have an eye on diversity and wanting to hire diversely. That is an area that we are obviously looking to improve ourselves. And that's an area that is a continual focus for myself and my team and our hiring teams. So that's one area that excites me. The other is really the new technology that's coming out to really help enable recruiters and sourcers attract and engage more talent. I feel like for a long time, you know, we've all been very dependent on our own job board, so applications, so incoming candidates. And really the only mode of being able to go out and source external candidates that are passive is through like LinkedIn. And I love the advent of new tools that are coming out that are either, you know, extensions of LinkedIn, like Chrome extensions that you can use within LinkedIn, or even standalone tools that are hugely beneficial outside of the LinkedIn world, because as everybody knows, you know, the market is super noisy right now. And just the more pipeline, the more exposure you can get to different different pipelines outside of just the typical LinkedIn space is going to be huge for all of us. So, you know, I look at some of the AI stuff, some of the machine learning tools that are coming out, some of the different scouring tools that are coming out and engagement tools that are kind of all wrapping themselves together. I think that we're going to start seeing a real convergence around those tools and your traditional ATSs and just bring a suite of products together that are going to make talent acquisition that much better. Because I think right now, Jan, you're probably aware, you know, we all need an ATS. There is not a perfect ATS out there. And, you know, we all to really leverage, especially at scale, you've got to bolt on things to your ATS to really make it effective. I look forward to more robust tooling for TA organizations. So
absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Thank you for sharing that. I can relate on so many levels with some of the trends that you're talking about, especially in these current market conditions, which leads me to a further point. When it comes to strategies to retain the top talent, you've mentioned that you, when you joined the organization, it was 100 plus people. Now it's, you know, 400 plus, I believe, and it continues to grow. And to retain the top talent probably remains one of the crucial top priorities for you as a person in charge of talent acquisition. You can get people in the door, right? But keeping them in-house is a different, completely different play. Tell us a little bit more about that. What works for you? What's not? What are some of the things you've learned throughout these years?
Yeah. I mean, first and foremost, I think the very first thing you need to be really good at as a recruiter, anybody in talent acquisition, is truly understanding the motivations of your candidates and understanding why a candidate is even entertaining the potential of moving, right? If it's strictly compensation, that's all they want. At least you know that on the front end, right? But really understanding, is it a cultural thing? Is it a problem with your hiring manager? Is it you don't see the future with the market opportunity that the company has? Just trying to understand what's in the hearts and minds of those candidates as much as possible, and then aligning the strengths of your organization to those, right? And keeping those front and center as you're talking to candidates and bringing them through the process. One of the things that Kong did in Q4 of last year, with the Great Resignation coming upon us, we were really concerned about attrition coming out of that. And one of the things that we did as a company is we did check-in meetings with all of our employees, where literally everybody in HR, talent team included, scheduled a 30-minute Zoom with every single person in the company to understand, number one, what brought you to Kong in the first place? What excited you about coming here? And number two, do you feel like we have lived up to those expectations? And if we haven't, how can we get back on track to really align with your motivations as to why you came here? And then number three, what's keeping you here at Kong? Because we don't want to lose sight of what's important to you as an employee. So what can we continue to do to make sure that your health and well-being and your needs are met as an employer, right? So engaging with your workforce in a very remote world is something that's difficult to do, but you've got to be really intentional about it. When you talk about retention, one of the things that we feel is a competitive advantage for Kong is our culture, right? Everybody talks about their culture and everybody wants to be a culture first organization. But from my perspective, the only way you can truly be a culture first organization is from the top down. And we had the luxury of having a CEO and a co-founding team that has always wanted to build a company based on its people, right? I mean, to give you an example, Jan, when I started, I mentioned we were about 120, 130 employees. At that point, we already had a director of employee experience, right? So we already had somebody who their job was to ensure that the culture of the company and the employees were always engaged with the company itself, right? So it's got to be top of mind. It's got to be front and center. It's got to be a strategy that is literally reinforced from the top down, especially during a time like this, because the less engaged your employees are, the easier it is for them to respond to a recruiting email, because every single one of them is receiving five or six on a weekly basis, if not more, right? And if you're not engaged, sorry, it's my eight-year-old. If you're not engaged with your employees, they're going to be less sticky, and it's just going to be easy for them to leave because they're going to get an opportunity that they can't refuse from somebody else, right? But if they're fully engaged, if they're fully bought into your mission and the culture of the organization supports them as a person, then, you know, somebody's going to reach out to them and tell them the grass is greener on the other side. And they're going to say, well, tell me how. It can't just be about comp, right? And that's what we're focused on, is we've taken the stance of, even for recruiting, we feel that if we're focused internally on making this the best environment for our employees, giving them the opportunity to be their best selves, that we feel that not only will it help us retain our current employees, but it will also help us with employee referrals. So it'll help us from a talent acquisition perspective. And you know, as well as I do, if I only have to fill two backfills versus 10 backfills, it frees my team up to then be able to go out and find and engage that talent. And then again, use the conversation of our culture to lure them in and get them engaged. So that's what we focus on here at Calm.
When it comes to pre-COVID and even during the past couple of years, and I talk to executives almost on a daily basis of companies of various size, and one of the recurring topics that we typically, you know, we touch upon very frequently is around onboarding new candidates, onboarding employees in a hybrid or fully virtual environments, which onboarding employees is difficult to begin with, but when you add another layer of complexity of just hybrid environment or fully virtual, that's another level of complexity that adds to that. What are your thoughts on that? What are some of the best practices that you've seen that really help organizations succeed in that space?
Well, one of the things that we did, and to your point, you know, onboarding is critical, especially in this environment where we're going to get bombarded by opportunity, regardless of where you are in your life cycle with a company. If you don't provide a top onboarding experience for somebody, the chances are is they're going to leave you now versus before you had them, you kind of had your claws in them. So onboarding is critical. And one of the things that we've done is through the course of 2020, when a lot of companies were dealing with the throes of COVID, we quickly made the pivot to going completely virtual as far as onboarding goes. And so what we did was we spent 6 months building a self-paced onboarding curriculum that hit on all the different areas of the business, right? So we've created onboarding buddies where that person is engaging them personally before they start. And then during their first month at the new, you know, within the company, the virtual onboarding content that we've created has been great in ramping people to familiarizing themselves with the company and who is where and what. You know, we are very, very attuned to doing employee check-ins. Like I had mentioned, the check-ins that we did at the end of Q4 with all the employees, our HR team schedules those regularly with our new hires. And that's hard to do in a scalable nature. But for a startup with 420 people, you know, we've got probably, I'd say probably 40 new hires a month. It's manageable for us to do a check-in with them every 30 days from an HR perspective, right? And one of the things that my recruiters do is my recruiters love to stay engaged with their hires once they start. So we do a lot of that to make sure that they're getting the support that they need. We've also pushed the hiring managers to really get hands-on with the onboarding, right? And create a structured onboarding plan, because a lot of folks will just kind of do it willy nilly. You know, they'll do it off the cuff, and, you know, somebody, maybe they meet with them on their first day and then they introduce them to their onboarding buddy, but there's really nothing structured for them to work through. We have to have a 2-week structured process to where they go through, they meet everybody on the team, they meet their onboarding buddy, they do all of their internal training, and it just gets them engaged with the organization at a deeper level. So that's some of the stuff that we've done. Some of those recommendations came from our VC firms that back us, like Andreessen Horowitz is one of our VC partners, and they've got phenomenal best practices that they like to roll out to their portfolio companies. And that was one of the things that they urged us to do, was to leverage the internal training curriculum to build it out. So.
Well, that's super exciting. And definitely thank you for sharing some of these insights. Very, very helpful. When it comes to interviewing, that's another space that's also very challenging. I've been on all different sides of the equation as a hiring manager, as a candidate, as part of the staffing organization. So I've seen different spectrums. And as in one of my favorite books, Ben Horowitz, you mentioned Andreessen Horowitz, Hard Thing About Hard Things. He talks about the interviews being overly focused on what are the weaknesses that I can tolerate in that particular candidate versus what are the strengths that I'm missing on my team. Tell us a little bit more about your personal thoughts on improving the space of interviewing. How can you really build that two-way street to allow for candidates also an opportunity to interview you as well? Just overall, what are your thoughts on interviewing?
Yeah, I mean, our philosophy on interviewing is, to your point, it's as much the candidate interviewing us as us interviewing them, right? Because to your point earlier, it's all about retention, especially in today's world. So we are looking for a long-term fit. You know, we want somebody who wants to be here for 3+ years. You know, part of how we can do that is by dangling the IPO experience to them. But even more so, you know, our culture, as I had mentioned, is the most important thing to us. And so every single person that we hire, that we're interviewing, we're trying to determine if they're a culture add, right? Not just a culture fit, but a culture add. And especially as we scale, it's going to be important, right? Because we don't want to water down our culture at all. So one of the things that we like to do is we talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? Everybody sells their candidates on why they should come to them, right? But what a lot of companies don't do is they're not honest about their warts. I mean, there is no perfect company out there. And so we take a very transparent approach to Kong, and we talk about, hey, what's great? Here's what's great, all right? But here's what we really need to work on. And this is part of what you coming on board can help us solve internally, right? And here are some of the missteps that we've had over the course of the last 3 years as a startup, right? Here are some of the things that have been hurdles that potentially held us back from additional acceleration. And I think that by being really transparent with people, especially if that's your culture, that number one, it displays that you really believe it, right? You really believe in communication, open communication. You believe in transparency. One of our characteristics at Kong that is core to our culture is humility, right? And while we think we're an amazing place to work, we're humble enough to be honest about what our issues are, right? And what our challenges are. And I think that's important because at the end of the day, employees, they don't expect you to be perfect, right? And when you put up that perfect front, it doesn't feel genuine, right? And as a candidate, again, if I don't expect you to be perfect, I want you to be honest with what some of the challenges are. And you know what? If those don't work for me, if those are red flags or showstoppers for me, let's address that now before I start with you. And then 3 months down the road, I'm like, wait a second, the rose-colored glasses are off. I'm now looking for another job, right? That company has just lost a tremendous amount of investment through the recruiting process, then through the onboarding process, and then even in the lost productivity of now having to restart that recruit all over again, right? So I think that, you take the approach of being really, really brutally honest through the interview process, and giving the candidate the opportunity through every step to interview us as much as we are interviewing them, I think that it lends to a longer term fit. It lends to a candidate being able to make a better decision from their perspective. I think that it alleviates even some of that challenge that you have with onboarding, because you've already kind of taken some of the anxiety out of those first 90 days, because you've been so honest with, hey, here are our issues. You're going to see them right away. Right. So I think that honesty and that transparency is critical through the interview process. And then, you know, you talked about Ben's book, and one of the things that we do with every candidate is through every step of the process, we are assessing that culture ad, right? To where we're very honest with, here's what our culture is. Here's what we're based on. Here's who we are. How does this resonate with you? Right. And we ask them to identify with a specific core value. And when somebody then you're asking a candidate to identify with a part of your culture and then ask them to articulate why they identify with that part of your culture, it just gets them even more bought in, right? They're already kind of, you know, it's like, you know, I use the example or the analogy of when you go and buy a house, right? If it's fully furnished and it's staged perfectly, oh man, you're going to pay out the nose for it, right? But if you walk into an empty house and there's nothing there, guess what? The value of that home decreases, right? So we try and paint as realistic a picture as we can through that process and get them as engaged in our culture as early as possible.
We've mentioned a few books as resources. What's your content diet looking like these days? What do you consume on a daily basis to keep yourself informed on all the things going on in your industry?
It's hard, man. You know, I've got two little kids as well. You saw one of them earlier. So I've got a lot of activities going on. So what I've started doing is I don't read as much as I used to. I do a lot of podcasts, and which is, you know, a little bit about how you and I got together. But I love to consume podcasts. I'll listen to them on my runs. I'll listen to them while I'm working out. I'll even listen to them while, you know, we're cleaning up the house and things like that. But I love to consume some of the VC podcasts to stay up to date with the startup community, what's hot in technology. I like to consume some of the, when I look at the work podcast that I look at, I do a lot with Saster so that I can stay attuned to the SaaS world. I like the Hunters and Unicorns podcast, which we're a medic sales shop here at Kong. And if you've never heard of the Hunters and Unicorns podcast, it basically is a podcast where they interview the different CROs and CXOs that have come out of the John McMahon School of Thought. So that's super interesting, hearing all these revenue and marketing leaders talk about how they drive scale and growth. I mentioned some of the VC. Andreessen Horowitz has a great podcast series that I listen to. I haven't found any great talent podcast yet. I keep kind of filtering through a bunch, but I'm hoping to try and find one that I can kind of stay attuned to, and maybe, Jan, it'll be yours. So that'll be interesting. So, but yeah, that's basically podcasts this way. I'm staying up to date now.
Yeah, that's definitely relatable. I'm the same way. It's easily consumed medium in terms of the information and the flexibility to be able to do that in terms of talent related podcasts. I'm the same way. I haven't yet to find something that's specific to that space. We focus on such a diverse topics, diverse groups of executives, and I just have a lot of fun on a daily basis learning from thought leaders just like yourself. In terms of, last but not least, the advice or maybe series of advice that you received early on in your career that you continuously refer back to even these days, and then you share with others whom you mentored, just share some thoughts from that perspective.
That's interesting. So there's a lot that was shared with me throughout the years, but some of the things that have resonated the most with me, especially with regards to like talent acquisition and leadership, probably first and foremost is control what you can control, and be just maniacal about that and not worry about the rest, right? You know, as well as anybody, Jan, talent acquisition and tech in general is a roller coaster. So do everything you can to control what you can control, right? The other thing that was hammered into my head early on is the concept, I don't know if you've ever heard of this before, but it's the concept of the emotional bank account, right? Where as a leader, as a manager, as a coach, as a mentor, you need to continually invest in the emotional bank accounts of your teammates, of your employees, right? So if you're continually investing in their emotional bank account, when you need to make a withdrawal, they know that it comes from a place of care, right? Because you've invested so much in them, so that when you do need to have that hard conversation, you can come at it from a place of care where their defenses are typically down. So that concept of the emotional bank account is something that I've lived with really for the last 15 years of my career, and trying to just build the best relationships I can with my team. You know, the whole idea of you never get a second chance to make a first impression, that's something that's really stuck with me. So when you think of that first impression, the preparation that goes into that first meeting or that first call, you want to be maniacal about your preparation, right? Because everybody knows that you win games in practice, right? So being as just freakish about your prep as you can. So before you speak to a candidate, before you make a customer call, just be absolutely crazy about trying to learn as much about them as possible, just so that it can be relatable, right? Those are some of the things that I try to impart on kind of a daily basis, right?
That's pretty cool, Chuck, and thanks for sharing that. And I can't thank you enough for your time today. It was very short and insightful conversation. Personally learned quite a bit. What I love doing with all the podcast guests is do a follow-up recording in about a year where we revisit a conversation from a year ago and see if everything we've discussed still makes sense, still applies. So I definitely look forward to doing that with you as well.
Definitely. That would be fun. Yeah, I'll be interested to see how things have changed. So, I mean, think about if we did it 12 months ago or even 24 months ago, my gosh, the next 12 months could be pretty crazy. So
Exactly. So I'm definitely looking forward to doing that. And thanks so much for your time today.
Absolutely, Jan. It's great to see you, my man. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.